Well, good evening, everyone. As Paul started off with a tennis analogy, I'm going to follow it a little bit. So when I was much younger, I was a ball girl. There you go. I've just given Paul a surprise. I was a ball girl for a player who was playing in the Guildford tournaments at the time, Yvonne Goolagon, or Yvonne Cawley. So for those people who remember that name, I was a ball girl. So keeping that tennis theme together, and to give me a few seconds to organize myself, first of all, please do not tell me the result of the tennis. I haven't been home since 8 o'clock this morning. So do not tell me the result, or probably Paul. I don't know if he's heard them or not. But can you just turn to the person next to you and just see if you have any tennis analogies or other sporting analogies that you can think of, or anything where you maybe have been out somewhere and you've seen something really important in the last week or month. Okay? Okay, do continue those conversations afterwards. And just see, you know, just, it's always lovely when somebody sparks a conversation, what pops back in your mind. I had forgotten about that analogy for me. As Paul said, we're starting a new series. We finished Moses, and as a team, we start praying into what's the new series going to be. And the words came out of, open the eyes of my heart, I want to see. And so over the next, probably 8 weeks, that's all of July and August, we're going to have the theme, open the eyes of my heart. And then it's going to also bring into the words that Jesus said, I only do what I see my Father doing. And when we open the eyes of our hearts, we often see what is happening around us. And that can be many things. It can be both seeing physically what's around us. It can be listening to what is around us. It's using all our emotions to actually read what's going on around us. But we really do need to see into what is happening. And then we need to respond to it. And that's one of the keys to this series, is how did Jesus respond to what he saw? He was in so many different situations, and we're going to use many different stories from the Gospels around the situations that he was in. But usually when we see something that's around us, we tend to rely on our own strengths. So this series is around helping us to actually see what is happening and take some time to say, God, what are you showing me today? I love the words from John 5, which says, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can do only what he sees his Father doing. Because whatever the Father does, the Son does also. So Jesus sees what the Father's doing. And he responds to it. He seeks the Father. He seeks the Father first and then gives his response. And when he responds, something happens to the people around him. Things begin to change. He influences the culture around him. I wonder what would happen if each one of you became a culture changer? We're going to take this whole theme not just into a theoretical understanding, but we want you to be able to apply it into your lives today. We want to help you begin to see the situations through God's eyes and to respond to them in the way that He would respond to. When we do that, you will start influencing the people around you, the situations that you are in. You will also, as you start practicing this more and more, begin to grow in your faith. This is an opportunity for you to share that growth that is happening as well. And through the places that God places you, you will begin to have an influence outwards that will change lives. And wouldn't it be amazing, during this 8 weeks, if we started having stories, testimonies, of where, because you were listening to the Father on that day, you responded, something happened around you. I'm also going to ask you to talk to the person next to you about, are you a culture changer? And I didn't ask that question, because I expect many of you don't think you are culture changers. But every one of you can change and influence the culture around you by being who you are, by listening to the Father. And we want to discover that over the 8 weeks. So we have this title, He can only do what He sees His Father doing. And each week we have another piece of the story. And it usually goes the power of. So this week we're going to be talking about the power of silence. And each week there'll be a theme as well. So I have the first one in a series. The information I've just shared with you, we will put on the website. So if people want to have that background information to the whole series, you can have it. And that's particularly helpful for any home groups who are going to follow the series as well. So let's look at this passage of scripture. And part of me always likes doing a little bit about context. I do not have context in my Strength Finder results. So I know all my Strength Finder results. So Jesus has been teaching at the temple courts in Jerusalem. But He didn't want to be seen. He had deliberately not gone with His disciples. He had held back because He didn't think it was His time yet. He knew that some loved His teaching. He also knew many opposed Him as well. He knew when He said these words, "My teaching is not my own, it comes from the one who sent me." It brought immediate opposition from the Pharisees. They didn't like what He was saying. And they were attempting to arrest Him. So today's passage is set in that context where they are looking for an opportunity to trap and arrest Him. And I want to focus on three things today. The first is the posture of humility. The second is the power of silence. And the third one, which only came to me as I was driving up from South Somerset this afternoon, is the promise of love, not judgment. So let me start with posture of humility. We have to remember that this passage starts with Jesus having been out in prayer on the Mount of Olives. He had come from a time where He'd already spent considerable time with His Father. He knew what was happening around Him. And then He walks into this situation, and what's the first thing He hears? "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such a woman. Now what do you say?" It's the sort of question that many of us face in our daily lives, where we're backed into a corner, something is said, and we're put on the spot, how do we respond? It's not an easy place to be. Very often you might want to argue your view, you might want to give an opinion, you might become very defensive. But what does Jesus do? He He gets down on his knees. And it said, he bends down. He bends down. And in that place of bending down, he's listening to his father. He's ignoring the talking that's going on, the questions that are being thrown at him. His focus is his father. I was so struck by those words, bent down, not just once, but twice, because he said, bend down, and then stooped. And when we bend down and when we stoop, we are bowing, recognizing that we don't have the answers. We don't know what to say in those situations. We need the Father's help. It is a place of humility and recognizing we can't do it on our own. It is so hard to be in this place, to say, I don't know what to do. But Jesus bent down. And I love the way that as I'm building a talk, God just throws something else in. And during the week, I was on the Bible in the Year, and there was an extract in there that talked about this picture. And this picture is by Filippino Lippi. It's of the Virgin and Child and the saints of Jerome and Dominic. And an art critic was looking at it and said all the proportions and perspectives were wrong. Until he got on his knees and looked up at it from his knees and saw that he had the wrong perspective. He was looking at it from the wrong perspective. How many times do we look at things from the wrong perspective? Because we don't go on our knees to seek God. I was challenged by this whole area, the posture of humility. We don't always have the answers, but we sometimes come at it in our own strength. I would love each one of us to have the posture of humility in the places that God has placed us. From that place of humility, Jesus stood up and faced the Pharisees. And he gave an answer. Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. And then he stooped down again. Not once, but twice. How do we each make the posture of humility our daily response to what we face? The second part I want to talk about is the power of silence. I actually do quite enjoy silence, particularly if I can be on my own. If I'm around people, it's not quite so easy because I get energy from being with people, yet I love being in places of silence. But when we are in a really, really difficult situation, whether it's in a conversation with in a relationship or in a meeting or anything else, it's maybe a difficult one. How easy is it for each of us to be silent? Jesus used the power of silence in different ways. Firstly, he took the power of silence to focus on his Father, to listen to what he was wanting. He was in prayer with his Father. He was listening to that still small voice of God. He also let the silence convict the Pharisees. He challenged them by his silence to look at their own behaviors and attitudes. Silence is very powerful when we use it to give us time to think things through, to listen to the Father. Because through this power of silence, this is what happened. At this, the Pharisees who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left. Do not underestimate the power of silence that you can have in a conversation. Today's world is one filled with noise and music and people talking and feeling you've got to speak. Yet I have learned of the power of silence, particularly when I am working with people. I love coaching, so having a conversation with Michael over who he is a joy for me. Yet there are times in those conversations when it's really good for me not to say anything. I'm going to give a clue away here, obviously, to anybody I coach. But creating that space, that silence, allows the person to start digging deep within them for what is really going on. And I have a friend who wasn't a coach, but because I was interested in his own development, I suggested he went to be trained as a coach. As part of his training, in front of a group of people, he was coaching someone, and he asked a question, and there was no answer. Now, the natural thing to do is to ask another question, but he didn't. He waited, and he waited. 9 minutes he waited. 9 minutes is a huge amount of time. But what happened? He gave the person space to draw out deeply what was going on, and she broke into tears and was able to say what was really the matter. The power of silence is really important. And for me, when I'm in those places of not quite knowing what to ask next, what's really going on, I will ask God, please give me a word. Please give me an insight. Please show me what's happening here at this moment in time so that I might use that. It's an opportunity to seek God. I don't know whether this will show up very clearly, but this is a quote from Mother Teresa about the importance of silence again. The power of silence on this occasion removed the opposition to the woman. We don't know what the power of silence did to her, but something changed for her. And then the final part of this tonight is about the promise of love and not judgment. From his bent position, Jesus stands up. Again, he comes from the kneeling to the standing. He respects this woman. That's what he's saying. I respect you because I'm standing before you. And then he says, well, where are they? Has no one condemned you? Then neither do I condemn you. Go now and leave your life of sin. If you take those words really slowly, there is so much emotion in it. There's no condemnation. There's no judgment. All there is love and forgiveness. Jesus knew a sin had been committed, yet what he showed her was love and forgiveness. The Pharisees had come to trap Jesus, to judge the woman. They had even been warned beforehand by Nicodemus to check out all the information. Because it says in John 7, does our law condemn a man without first hearing him to find out what he has been doing? No one thought to ask a question. What Jesus did on that day was totally countercultural. He did not judge. He just gave words of love and freedom. Go now and leave your life of sin. I wonder what those words said to her. I wonder what she took home to her family to explain what had happened. Because I expect they were not expecting her to come back. The difficulty is we live in a world where every single day we make judgments. It's so easy to look at a situation, to look at a person, to hear things going on and judge. What would happen if each one of us started taking a bit of time and saying, God, show me it from your perspective. Let me not have the eyes of judgment, but let me have the eyes of love. I want to challenge you this week, because I think it's quite difficult to step out of that place of judgment. My guess is it'll sneak up on you before you've even recognized it. And I would just like you to take time this week to notice when you are judging and then stop and say, thank you, God, for revealing. And then look to how you can look, see the love in the situation rather than judgment. So as we just go back through what we have done, the posture of humility, the power of silence, and the promise to love and not judge. When we live that out, something will happen within us. Something will change and grow. And it will spill out into the people around us, into the situations that God has placed us. We will become culture influencers and culture changers. That's an amazing privilege to do that for Christ. I want to take time to do some reflection today as I lead into communion. And before I go to stand for preparing for communion, let me just explain about some of the things that we're going to do during communion as well. All the way through the last part of this week, I've had a real sense about this posture of humility. And I had a sense that we need to create space tonight for people who want to kneel to receive communion. So we're going to have communion along the front here. So I suggest you start lining up over there and come all the way along. And as people move away, you can come and take a space. And there'll be three of us serving communion here. We also felt that there's a sense of community, needing to be standing together and being in community together. So we're going to have two other places where communion will be served. We're going to have one over the back there. And Janet and Michael will go and stand over there. And I suggest you just gather around in a circle in community. And they'll lead the sharing of communion. And we'll have the same over in that corner over there where Joe and Derek will be leading it. Please go where you want to go. And please do not feel rushed in any way today. If you feel that you want to stay in that place of kneeling, stay in that place of kneeling. There is non-alcoholic wine and gluten-free wafers, which we'll be serving from the front as well.